Welcome back to Distinct Nostalgia by MIM.
More than a podcast.
Brought to you in partnership with Life Rooms and Mersey Care NHS Foundation Trust. Staying well, staying home.
Last spring, we lost one half of the great comedy double act, Little and Large. On the 2nd of April 2020, Eddie Large died from COVID-19. This is part two of Little Remembers Large, Sid Little's conversation with Distinct Nostalgia's Caroline Hayward.
I find it really interesting that you're saying that the telly wasn't your kind of where you felt most comfortable.
No.
Were you, when your series, because your series ran till 91,
it was 77 to 91, yeah.
Which is huge, absolutely massive. I didn't realise that it had ran so long when I was doing my research.
Well, the thing is, I think they were looking for someone to replace us, because Saturday night on television, prime time, is a hard slot to fill.
Yeah.
You've got to be, in those days, squeaky clean. You can't be blue, which a lot of the comics of the day were. And, you know, they couldn't fill that slot. And they were looking desperately to replace us, the BBC, because that's one we never felt we fit it, although we did well, don't get me wrong.
When did you move to the BBC from, or was it always BBC?
We did our first show with ITV, Thames Television.
Yeah.
We replaced Op Knox. But it was Michael Hurl, a producer, he used to do Top of the Pops and all that. And he used to do a thing called, they used to go around the summer season in the summer and do summertime
special. Yeah.
And we did a few of those, and
we
I think we was in Bournemouth or somewhere, and we stormed them this night, you know, and Michael came into the dressing room, the tent I should say, and he said "Hi, boys, I suppose you're doing another series for Thames, aren't you?" And like we'd gone from nowhere, and, you know, it was a success, it didn't die, you know what I mean. And said, "Well, we don't know." I said, "What do you mean you don't know?" You know, he said, "Well, they should have grabbed you straight after you'd done the first one." I said, "Well, we don't know. Our agent, you know, hasn't been said they've not come back yet." So he said, "Is it all right to approach your agent?" Which they have, you know. Said, "Yeah, to what you can, yeah." So he did, and the next thing, we've got a 3-year contract with the BBC. So that's how it was. And Philip Jones, who was the head of Thames Television, never forgave us. He said, you know, like, "We did the dirt." Hang on, no, you didn't review it. You know, they didn't.
Cause you snooze, you lose.
Yeah. Oh, I like that, yeah.
Do you like that one? Yeah. Have you not heard that before?
You do, yeah.
So when all that was potentially coming to an end in 91, was it a bittersweet?
A lot of acts, well, not a lot, but I've never found it hard to sort of come down, because you can't stay on the top forever.
Mm.
You can't, you know. Some maybe do it, Terry Wogan, people are brilliant, but that's a different ballgame. Comedy, you know. Anyway, so it was hard to stay there, and I never felt it was a problem. I never felt, oh, you know, where am I going to go now? What, you know, am I going to earn a living? This, that and the other. I just, like I told you early on, when I became myself, it was hard when Eddie was ill and we realised it was the end of Little and Large. That was, that was the mid-90s, just after we'd done This Is Your Life, then 95. 90s weren't very good for us, you know, like Eddie with his health and everything. And it was really sad times, 90, they weren't good times. But it was also, I was changing into a single act, and it was very hard, but I never felt I wanted to, you know, oh, nobody wants me anymore. It's very hard for some people. I mean, blessing Frank Bruno, I think he found it hard when he wasn't the champion of the world anymore, and, you know, he had a nervous breakdown, I think, and all that. So,
well, people, I've talked to a lot to other people about that. If you're not seen on telly on a weekly basis or every so often, it's like you've disappeared. Like you no longer exist. And then, you know, or that people perceive that if you're not doing a massive summer season on the end of the pier, but you're doing one night at a working men's club, that's not
Yeah.
Got the same kudos, or
no,
that it's...
That's it, yeah. But what are you doing here? Why are you in this club here? Oh, yes, you used to get that.
And there's that sense of, well, I've got a mortgage to pay and I've got bills.
Yeah.
And
well,
actually, I'm quite happy doing this.
Exactly.
Or people assume maybe that it's, a negative thing. And actually, you know... Nobody ever says to a plumber, why are you not plumbing anymore?
No.
What do you mean you're not a plumber anymore?
true.
Why are you not plumbing anymore? But if you're not seen to be at the top of your game it's somehow a negative thing that people can't change or...
Yeah, they change, towards you.
Mm.
Because, as you've just said, it's like now makes me laugh because being in the pub, it's like being in showbiz. You never left. They're always asking... When he was alive, bless him, I was Eddie, and he said, oh yeah, he's still alive, he used to do, and he used to go on the shows I'd open with, I'd come on here, say maybe on the pub, and say like, good evening, hands up all those who thought we were dead, and this, that and the other.
Yeah.
But it never got me down that we'd come off the pedestal, as it were. It was other people that were upset for you. Get back on telly, the crap that's on now, Sid. You and Eddie, you do this and brilliant. And there's no way. When Eddie, like I say, was ill and that, he was sort of a power, sort of run around the stage when we did the live shows. And he just couldn't
Very
do it.
Physical.
Yeah.
And I don't think people always realise how much energy is required
to
stress. Keep an audience entertained. Yeah. They think, particularly when you make it look easy, but actually the energy required to perform for half an hour, a summer season, that's a massive amount
And people don't realise as well, it's not just you're on stage for half an hour or an hour. You've got to get there. And we lived in Manchester for a long time, and then we moved wherever, but we still had to get to the venues, and then you're either in a hotel or you stay over or this, that, then you've got to get to another gig. And then as the clubs and that started dying in the late 80s, early 90s, the work shrunk to one night stands rather than a week's work, because the clubs, like I say, the working men's clubs were all going down. And there was what happened when Opportunity Knox died, there was no outlet for new talent to get through into that category. And then that's when the comedy clubs came and all this. There was nowhere they could hone the skill at comedy. It got really hard, and so it was the change,
Obviously, we've said about Eddie's ill health, that realisation that you weren't going to continue as your double act. And is it like going through a grieving process for that thing? I know you've said it didn't massively...
Well, we were both still alive.
Mm.
And we both had our own lives to live. When we first split, it was like getting divorced. Not that, we've always been friends, from as a teenage. And it was, and we got on well, when we first split, I didn't used to ring him for ages, and Eddie didn't ring me, because it was like it was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And we got on with our own lives. And then, as I said, I was trying to pick up the pieces, because I still wanted to work, and I had to work, and so that was it, because I had my family to keep and everything. And Eddie, when he did, after about, I think it was 18 months or a year, when he started feeling better, because it was a hell of an operation, he started doing after dinner speaking, which he's brilliant at. I've seen him, and because he was a clever guy and very talented. And it was he did well for a while, but he couldn't do him anymore. It was too much on the heart and everything.
Yeah.
And Patsy's wife was worrying about him, and they just retired more or less. And then I sort of, as I said, I wasn't enjoying it anymore, and my wife came into the pub business 8 years ago or something like that. And so I'm just
yeah,
come down when I want, and if I want a chat. It's a bit sad at the moment because we can't have live cab. We usually have two bands on at weekend, and we have an open mic on a Wednesday, karaoke on Friday and Tuesdays. So it's a music pub rather than a sports pub. You know, like they all have televisions. We've got one television which is never on. So we like it
it's
like
more
that.
More live entertainment.
And, yeah, and we're keeping music live. Yeah, and the bands that come are great. You know, but. You know, people, when they come to the market, come over here, said, "Little, wow, what are you doing here?" You know, it's like, "Oh, yeah, oh, get back on the telly and all this." And, you know, "Oh, is it strange?" You know, I said, "No," because people forget that we grow old like they do.
Yeah.
You know, they still think, it's like Lauren Hardy. You know, when you see them, you think they're still alive, but they've been dead years. You know, Morecambe and Wise, their things have been shown. So you... They never die.
No, they stay in that kind of... And you have that image of them as you remember them when they were an important part of your life. Yeah. And that sense of actually, you know, most people retire at 65. Why
exactly,
do you not expect me... Why do you expect me still to be doing it till I'm, you know...
And as I said, I've still got my guitar and pick it up now and again upstairs, but I don't... You know, I still like the music part of it, but I don't miss it. But when I get offered like a TV, like I say, the Marigold Hotel, I was like that whether to take it, and I thought, oh, and then I found out that the Crankies were doing it. Well, me and the Crankies go back years. We did the clubs and that, going back to them, and so it was great. I thought, oh, I've got someone to it. I don't know the others. But then when I got to know them all, you know, Stanley Johnson of all people, Stephanie Beecham, she seemed to like me for some reason.
Yeah.
My wife was quite worried. and it was so when something like that comes up, but there's too many reality shows now. Come Dine With Me and, you know, After Dinner this and... You know, we've not been offered Love Island. I don't know why.
You need to phone them about that.
No.
I think though some of those shows, for me, the joy is seeing the people that you loved growing up.
Yeah.
And seeing a different side to them. So I've just watched the recent
Marigold
Hotel one, and just absolutely fell in love with Susie Blake, who I remember from the Russ Abbott show and the Victoria Wood show. But yourself on Marigold Hotel, my daughter adores you because she was just thought you were, and we loved when you went to learn to cook.
Oh yeah,
that's one of my favourite moments from the Marigold Hotel. And you went and you had your cookery lesson, and then you came back because we love India as well because we've been to India.
Yeah.
Well, me and my husband went, and then we've taken my daughter. So there's that element of it, of actually seeing India.
Yeah.
But there's also the joy of seeing people experience different things, and then thinking about their careers and hearing the stories of their careers and how they connect and what they've done. I think
it's amazing the reaction I got from that show. It's more than me and Eddie used to get, I'm sure. They still come up to me now, "Oh, Sid, Marigold, you were great," you know. And they always seem to remember the chicken when, you know, I'd never seen that. I mean, like, for your listeners, you know, I was at a market and this butcher chopped a couple of chickens' heads off, and because that's the only way they could keep them fresh, isn't it? Keep them alive till they're needed.
Till they're needed.
And that was it. But I'd never seen that. And I went to the market with Bob Champion, who was an ex jockey, had cancer and went on to win the Grand National, and also Ian Cranky, one of the Cranky, who his dad was a butcher, and Bob was is a farmer. So they've seen it all before. Me, I was a townie, and never seen that. And it turned my stomach. Oh my God, you know. And then the producer's going like this, and the wings, he's got his hands. You know, because Ian said, "It's not going to feed all of us this." And he says like that. He said, "Oh, and another, not another two, no. You know, and that was weird. But, and the great thing I liked is, I can't believe, I'm on a walkabout and all of a sudden I hear this. Sit down, where's that? And I walked around and there's like an open, it was like a shop without the window, and there's a fella in the back, little old man on his haunches, you know, and with his legs crossed, which I could never do.
No.
and he had a young kid with him, with a little one, and he's teaching him how to play the sitar. And I went in, and the camera's following me in, you know, and I eventually borrowed one for a fortnight to see if I could play it. But no way. I've got a guitar upstairs from India, so that's good.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
I think that's the joy, though, is seeing you experience. What came across on that for me was how open you were to new experiences, and actually something that you were passionate about, then going and learning, you know, the cookery side and the guitar thing. I'd forgotten about the chicken bit, but now
that,
you say
everyone
it,
remembers that one. Yeah. They all say, oh great, you know, when are you going on again, when are you? And then we went to Vietnam. One of the experiences I remember there was it was me, Wayne Sleep, Stephanie Beecham again.
And, I'm surprised to let you go.
And who else? What's she called? She's a chef, a big chef.
Rosemary
Scheider.
Yeah.
That's right. And she was a bag of fun. And she told me off once because I said, like, you know, Rosemary, you're very loud. She went, I'm not very loud. Wow, you know, frightened me to death. And she was very loud. But me and Wayne had to, you never knew what you're doing from day to day. You just said, oh, you're going swimming tomorrow. Oh, great. So you're thinking swimming baths, Vietnam, you know. But you're thinking there must be a swimming bath. So they put us on these two bicycles, motorbikes, on the back of them. These bike riders took us to this bridge, and it looked like the bridge on the River Kwai, you know. I thought, oh, we're going in a river, you know, they're putting us in a river. And we're walking through this banana plantation, and we got to the river's edge. Because on the way, we're asking, the river, you know, is it you know, the river this way? And they're laughing. I said, I don't like this, why are they laughing? So anyway, we get there, and there's all these little Vietnamese fellas, just fellas, running around with no clothes on. It was a naked swimming. It was a club, but naked, you know, because you're going to a swimming club. and it was, they were like naked. Well, Wayne, oh my God, you know, he's like this. Oh, it was so funny. And we got in the water with them. You know, we had trunks on. And we got in the water, but then they thought this was hilarious, these fellas, you know, because they're in with us. Because it was a real fast flowing, and I'm not a good swimmer. But it's sort of, it was all muddy. It was,
was it meant to be therapeutic?
Yes. Well, the thing is, it's mud. And they're picking this mud up off the bottom of the river and slinging it on our heads, boom, like this, you know. And me and Wayne, oh my, we went along with it, but it was scary, that. It was, but they were good as gold. And we got talking to them on camera, you know, on they've been doing it for years and years. But you really, I remember seeing the, what's it called, the Deer Hunter, and, you know, Vietnam films, and you can't get that out of your head, you know.
No, this
scary. It's still, you know, we were living in the north part, we were in the
Hanoi.
Communist part, Hanoi.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't go to Saigon or Ho Chi Minh City, no. Because it was only there 9 days, but it was an experience again.
And I suppose that's the joy now, is that you have the ability to pick and choose that, well, I'll go and visit Vietnam because somebody's given me the opportunity, and if you don't want to do something,
that's it. I mean, not well off, but I've got a pension, and that's good enough for me. My wife's got the pub, and she runs it, and so I'm happy. You know, hopefully I can live a few years now and not have the strain of show business.
Yeah.
Because like I say, I can do pick and choose what I want to do.
Yeah.
Because the travelling's a hard bit. I mean, that's why Eddie couldn't do it towards the end. There was no way. He said, you're going to have to pick me up from door to door if you want him to do anything, you know.
Looking back, I'm guessing there's nothing you'd really change.
No, I don't regret anything in show business. I don't regret anything we've done. We're very lucky. We were at the right place at the right time, and because there was loads of double acts around when me and Eddie were in the 60s, loads of double acts that were as good as us, if not Daly and Wayne, there was one called. We thought they'd have been took the slot that we took, but they didn't. We were the lucky ones.
Mm,
and
then
Tommy and Bobby, it took them a few years after us to get established, which they did, and then that was it. Wow, they went even higher than us, to be honest. They did a film, I think, Boys in Blue, yeah.
They did, yeah. I did notice, actually, I was watching one of your shows. Did you film a lot round here?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because I noticed the pier
Well, we did the summer season,
you were doing
say.
The, yeah.
So you always did 2 weeks filming in wherever, and so they come to us.
Yeah.
The film unit would come to us, and they'd spend a fortnight up here, but they'd recce it before they came, and if it's like a Robin Hood one, they'd find a forest somewhere around here. If it was I remember us going to what's it called, the railway station up Carnforth.
Oh, Carnforth. Was that the brief? I watched that
brief
one
encounters,
today, the brief
yeah.
encounter
yeah.
one.
Well,
yeah.
Well, that was it where we did that thing. And that was an experience, but that's what they find all these, and you drop, and then you come back and do the two shows a night on the pier or on the Opera House, and then next day you're up early doing the films. I loved that bit. I loved the filming bit.
Yeah.
In television, but I didn't like the actual performing on in the theatre, especially the Concrete Donut down London, you know, Wood Lane it was called.
Mm.
And I was nervous, especially, and I always remember we got a producer after Michael Earle and all that. We had a few, then we had one called Bill Wilson. He did Till Death Us Do Part, and he did quite a few, and he's a smashing guy. Lovely, he's dead now, bless him. And he knew I was nervous and everything, and he was trying to figure out what it was. And we used to stand, Eddie'd be one side of the in the wings on the left or whatever, I'd be on the right, and I'd give him time when the clock starts, and then 5, 4, 3, 2 coming to you, and then you hear da da da, and you go down the steps like this, and then meet up in the middle, and then you do what you'd rehearsed, and after about 2 or 3 lines, I'd mostly forget or screw it up, and then we'd have to do it again. Which that's the thing, that but Eddie was brilliant ad libbing, and he'd get out of it like that. And the ad libs were better than some of the scripts we got, but no, it had to be because the camera has scripts as well. It's the cameras, so it's got to be like that. And that's why, I mean, if I think it was round today, if we were at that age, you know, young, it'd be brilliant because just the ad libbing was fantastic. Eddie, he was so clever. And but Billy Wilson, the producer, he said, "Sid, I've got an idea." He said, "You won't hear the clock, because that was it." He said, "You know, coming to you in 20 seconds, 15, 10, 9, 8, and I could feel you, 7, 6, 5, and it was dead, da 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 down, and that was me stressed out. So he stopped the clock, you know, he didn't have the clock on. Don't say anything. We said, when you hear the music, go. And I did, and it did. I still got it wrong. No. But it was better. It wasn't as bad.
It helped,
but yeah.
But there's and I suppose there's that sense of, if it's a live show, you just roll with it with it, and then it's over. Whereas if you've got to stop and everyone's like, reset, and there is that edge of, oh, no, I've done it wrong. What if it goes wrong this time? It can be.
One of the hardest things is, I remember, it was when, let me think now, it was the mid-80s, I think it was, and when we're doing summer seasons and that, on our summer season, our agent had Michael Barrymore, and Michael Barrymore would do our summer shows with us, because he'd want all right, Michael goes on, and it was great at first because Michael was unknown really when we had him on, so it was good, and he'd finished the first half of, but then he started to do television and everything, and he started to get stronger and stronger. And we had to say we can't have him on the, you know, on our shows anymore. He's too strong. You could let him top the bill himself, do his own. Oh, he's not ready yet. Anyway, the rest is history. You know, he did well. But what I'm saying, he was our warm up man for a while, and he was all right when everything was going wrong. But when there's a long break, which there was this particular night, he went into his act in the audience. Well, he stormed because, you know, it's out, out, and all that, you know. And we couldn't follow it. We had to, more or less the show we went through, but we had to redo it all again, you know, the week after, because it was too strong. We just couldn't follow it. And we said, we can't have Michael anymore on that, you know. Because he wasn't, he was coming, he was a people person. And yeah. So he's perfect for it. But, you know, he was all right when he's just saying, where are you from and all that. But then when he started doing his act, that was it, you know. That was hard. Yeah. So, but, you know, it's hard to say, sorry, Michael. But then he went on to, boom, you know.
Yeah.
Only on Distinct Nostalgia.
When I ran out of children's books, I used to read from Woman's Home. Who knew a four-year-old would be gripped by an article on cross-stitch?
We're uniting the ages with Generation Games, a series of comedy and drama monologues and duologues coming exclusively to Distinct Nostalgia. Stories exploring connections, friendships, and relationships between people across different age groups, beginning with Missing You, starring June Brown and Sam Barnard.
Mum thinks I need protecting, but I don't need protecting from love.
Pity that social worker of his can't do something useful for a change. Contact the noise abatement lot. Put in a complaint.
I like her, I said. And then, silence. What's the problem? I asked. She'll take advantage of you, Mum warned.
Missing You, by Richard Vergette. With the legendary June Brown, only on Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
Dear Miss Jones, may I call you Clementina? Firstly, may I say how nice it was to meet you in the park yesterday?
Distinct Comedy presents Letters from One Border Terrier Pup to Another.
Apparently, socks that cannot accommodate toes because they have large holes where said toes should be fail to fulfil any real purpose.
Based on true events, seen through canine eyes.
I now know that I'm definitely afraid of both heights and, not surprisingly, of big ladies.
Dear Clementina, search for Distinct Comedy wherever you get your podcasts.
Sincerely yours, Stanley Burke.
Woof! Distinct Comedy. Fresh and original.
Get Kettle on, Dotty. I'm thriping. Have you heard about her at number 38?
This is right.
Emma, yeah. She's only gone and got herself an hot tub.
Meet Florian Dotty by Janice Fryett. Two northern lasses who love a good goss.
She's invited us round to help her christen it. You might need to trim your lady garden a bit.
And they'll have a sideswipe at anything, from the neighbours and social issues to sexuality and social media.
Gypsy Queen?
No, thanks, Satan. I'm on a health kick.
Well, you don't look very healthy right now. You've got a funny colour.
A Distinct Comedy presentation, only on Distinct Nostalgia.
It'll be just like Love Island.
Love Island? Are you kidding? Lesbian Love Island, more like, if it's just us three.
Listen by scrolling through the Distinct Nostalgia feed.
Hello and welcome to The Likely Dads, a new series that looks at parenting from the paternal perspective.
I'm always wary of people who plan kids. Leave your life that structured. Just stay away from me, we're not going to get on.
A brand new show from the team behind Distinct Nostalgia.
I'm Tim Vincent, and each week I'll be joined by my fellow Likely Dads, Mick Ferry and Russell Kane, as well as a series of special guests to discuss different aspects of fatherhood.
When a man has an urge to have a child, it's not spoken about much. Women sort of own this area.
We're sort of open. It was going to be like the old films I watched, where I'd just have a pipe and I'd be in a study. You just go, you're going to see your father now for 10 minutes. Hello, children, what have you been up to today? I'm not interested. All right, off to bed.
An MIM production for BBC Radio 4.
We hope you'll join us and subscribe to The Likely Dads on BBC Sounds.
Distinct Comedy. Fresh and original.
Hello, officer, I want to report a robbery.
A new series about the secret world of nocturnal security.
Yeah, I ordered a Chinese from the Golden Moon and they forgot to send me a can of Coke.
A Distinct Comedy presentation.
Well, yeah, I consider it an emergency. I'm gasping here. That idiot on the day shift stolen the last of my flicking tea bags.
Barry Pigeon protects.
Well, I'm telling you, if you lot don't sort this out, it's going to be like big trouble in Little China down here.
Follow the exploits of Barry Pigeon, the best night security guard in Chorley, as he discusses everything from his wife...
She were too big for Zumba, so she signed up for Bumba.
It's like Zumba, only they just sit on their arse and flap their arms around a bit.
To his favourite food.
I love eggs, bloody love them. Poached, scrambled, fried, scotched, cream. I love them all.
From Andrew Birtwell and Kurt Brooks, starring Roe David McClelland, and guest starring Royston Mayo and Bruce Jackson.
Columbo meets Sherlock, that's me.
Barry Pigeon protects.
I know what people think about this job, but it's not all sitting on your ass, drinking brews and watching Challenge TV. I sometimes bring a book as well.
Watch now at distinctnostalgia.com.
Take 23.
Distinct Comedy presents.
Oh, hello. I'm Jolyon Karp. I'm doing a voiceover.
Oh, hello.
Experience a day in the life of voiceover guy.
Take 13.
I'm playing a pirate.
Are you sure you're in the right place?
Written and performed by Jonathan Kidd.
Take 24.
Aha! Splice the main brace, me hearties. Get on down to Captain Jacob's boat supplies. Sail is now on. Get it?
Oh, good, let's treat that one as a run-through.
Aha!
Available now on the Distinct Comedy Podcast.
Okay then, can we do a series of less piratical wild ahas in threes and we'll splice them on? That okay, Paul?
The trials and tribulations of a life spent in voiceover.
Sorry, I only have two lemon with honey.
I'd like my coffee. I shall scream without a coffee.
New and original comedy.
Softer.
Aha!
Well, actually, on reflection, I'm not happy with them.
I like what we had, all rough and piratey.
Listen on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or I might have to give you a black spot.
That was blood out of a stone. Won't use him again.
I just want to ask you, what was the first gig you did without Eddie, and how was that? Can you remember?
Well, I remember I thought I'd have a go after dinner speaking. This is the worst one, this. After dinner speaking, and I'm not very good at... Eddie's fantastic, he'd do a script and he'll get it off and then that's him, off he goes. And I had an idea what I was going to say and everything. And I took my guitar along and it was a lunchtime and it was, I think it was Leeds, and I think it was the Rhinos, it was a rugby club. So I said, and it was lunchtime, and is it a mixed audience? Oh, it's a mixed audience, yeah. Because with the girls, they like that. Used to do Gene Pickney and all that and everything, and it went down well. But anyway, so I go there, and it's all fellas in it. And not only that, he said, "Oh, Sid, it was the start of the football, the World Foots. I think England were playing Sweden, and they said they'll have a soup, and then." They put me on, then they'll have some, then they'll put the screen down, so you've got to be finished by this, that and the other. So it's all this pressure's building on me, and they're all these fellas, and they're all drinking everything, and I went on and I died on my backside, died, and the guy wasn't very sympathetic when I come off. He's like saying, "Well, folks, you can have the video of that show if you want." No. And they were very cruel, the guys in the audience were saying I can't remember, but they were skitting at me all the time.
Yeah, heckling.
And I can't do it, you know. I mean, and it really hurt me. And I thought, what am I doing? And so I never did any after dinners after that. But I stuck to, like, the cruise ships were great for 9 years. They got hard because the same thing. They wanted more. They want you to do more shows and travel further for it. I remember having the QE2. I'd done it a few times, and they said, "Sid, the QE2 is going round the world on its last voyage. Would you like to just do it for the last time?" "Oh, yes. Are you doing anything next week?" No, I'm not. Great. The other thing is, though, it's in Australia. "Oh, yeah, and it's only 4 days to do." So they flew me out. I'd say I'd accept it, so I had to do it. So, because I'd think, I've not been to Australia. Anyway, so they flew me out. I went from Manchester Heathrow to Hong Kong, got off for an hour while they refueled, back on Melbourne, got all my stuff off onto another plane to Tasmania, Hobart, and got the ship the next day, got on the ship, the cruise ship, on the QE2. And then I did the show that night. I said, "I know you've had a long journey." He said, "No, but you're on tonight." Oh my God. But I was going to think, oh, I don't care if I die, you know. But I did a storm. I was great. I was dead chuffed. A little old lady come up to me. She said, Sid, she said, you're a breath of fresh air last night. She said, it was great. She said, I'm bloody fed up of Nessendone and all these Nessendone, you know. They must have all singing it, you know. And all that. And that was great. And then that was what my first night, and that was it. Then we went to Melbourne, sailed to Melbourne. Then we sailed from Melbourne to Adelaide. I got off at Adelaide and flew from Adelaide, Melbourne, Singapore, an hour on the plane, Heathrow, Manchester. And it took me a fortnight to get over it.
Because oh,
I didn't
word.
Met myself coming back. You know,
all that way, and how long was your spot?
An hour.
That's incredible,
yeah.
Well,
though. Two spots, actually, two sittings, but I mean, yeah.
That's incredible, though, that somebody... Yeah. I mean, it's very flattering that somebody goes...
Oh, yeah, well...
We want to
I mean,
see
imagine
little,
the price it must have cost them to get me there, you know?
Yeah, and then to... And I guess you don't get to see anything, do you?
No, Melbourne was about the only one I saw just for a little bit, and that was it. Yeah.
And with the same with that is that when you do somewhere that's live, unless you come off the stage and go straight home, you're still on, aren't you?
Yeah,
you know, because people want to talk to you and people want to share memories.
Well, that's what used to get me down with the ships was, I'm not a big headed or anything like that, but by that time in the 90s, 2000, in 2000 now, yeah, 2003 I started doing them. And right through for 9 years or whenever it was, 10 years. And what got me was that where I used to queue up with the people coming, passengers on the ship, and be, hiya Sid, oh, are you on, you know, are you, where have you booked, have you come to see? So no, I'm performing for you. Oh, great, you know, and all that. So then, as you say, you come off stage and, oh Sid, how's your mate? So you'd have a script ready, you know. Eddie, yeah, he's all right, you know, and all this, that, and the other, and you do a chat and everything. But that was every night, every time. They ask you the same questions: how's your mate? You know, how's he doing, and all that. And it's sort of a. But I don't mind that. I mean, I've heard of stories of some celebrities staying in the cabin, didn't want to come out. They'd do the spot and that was it. You'd never see them again, you know, till they got off the ship. And I thought, I'm not like that. I have to, and I don't mind it. I love it in a way. I've got, you know, and but it got me down because the entertainment, the bosses, the head, you know, the ones who were in charge of the entertainment who put you on, you know, they were younger and all that, and they couldn't care less. You know, who you was or anything. And so, not that I wanted any preference, it's just that a bit more, you know, I was doing things that like Joe Bloggs, like the act that was on, couldn't do because they didn't know him until he'd done his spot. But I have got history, and it wasn't appreciated, and I thought, oh well, I'm not doing any more. And the journeys got harder, and it really, you know, sort of did. Yeah, it was strong. Oh, they send you to get to, say, Barbados. You'd fly, as I say, from Manchester Heathrow to Miami, stay overnight, then get to Barbados. It was a 5-day cruise, and then you're back again, and then fly. And it was, it's all that, and it really got hard.
It's exhausting. Yeah.
I remember seeing Bernie Clifton, talking about Bernie, because you've done an interview with him. And Bernie, it was 5 o'clock in the morning at Stansted Airport. I'd just got off and was going on to some ship. And all of a sudden, you know, I heard this shout that, oh no, hooligan, you know. Oi, Sid Little, if anyone at 5 o'clock in the morning at Stansted, I never thought I'd see Sid Little. And it was Bernie, bless him, because he's in a band, a brass band that goes around following England, you know, the football team. To all the different, I think they're going to Romania or somewhere like that, and he was going off to a flight, and that was Bernie, lovely man.
I've been incredibly lucky, having this time to chat to people about these wonderful memories that
could keep you there for. I don't know how long we've been doing it now, but
we're only on an hour and a half.
Oh my goodness, your producer will be going mad.
Oh my goodness, he'll be quite pleased that it's that short. My normal length is like 2 hours. Yeah. So
unless when you edit it together,
the there's not much editing required, I don't think. So, no, I've absolutely thoroughly enjoyed listening to your stories. It's been an absolute joy. It's such a sad, poignant moment that Eddie can't be with us to chat and get both your memories together. But
it is sad. I mean, because he was with him being a little bit older than me, and but in his memory is better than mine was, bless him. And someone had asked in here, they go like, "Hey, I remember seeing you at the so and so club in 1963, blah blah blah." I said, "No, we never did that." This so I only will know Eddie, did we ever do the blah blah? Yeah, we did it in so and so. Oh right, you know. So I miss that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's a trivial little thing, but you know, I miss all that. And now and again, like, oh, City, you know, they got beat. Oh, I better phone him up. You know, he's not here anymore.
Yeah, those things that you miss them. Those little moments that you can't share with somebody anymore. Yeah. No, that's.
I mean, he was lovely when I did the Barry Gold and things like that. And I did MasterChef as well and all that. And they were dead chuffed, you know. Like, hey, Sid, brilliant. Oh, you should win it. You know, no. and it was it was very, you know, he wanted me to do well, you know, which was great. Because I suppose it was like keeping Little and Large alive, really.
Yeah, and you can't, I mean, there's so many double acts or plays or films about double acts where there's a bad split and it's not a friendly split, or that actually to still have that relationship.
Well, it was sad that we were in lockdown when he died, April, and we went down to see him when he was very ill, and his second heart was failing. That was it, really. He did get corona, but eventually it was the heart that killed him, the heart failure. But the last time I saw him, you know, bless him, I was stroking his hair and I thought, wow, you know, because he was really ill. And then we weren't allowed, even Patsy and his son Ryan weren't allowed to go and see him. And that must have been hard for them. I used to phone him up every day, and I think he liked that.
Mm.
And then eventually, the day before he passed away, I phoned him up, you know, and he wasn't there. And then he passed away, died. And we thought, we won't be going to the funeral and all that. Anyway, we found out, I phoned up the police, said, would I be all right to drive from Fleetwood to Bristol? Because it's a long way. And he said, yeah, take the precautions or whatever this. So me and Cherie, we got sandwiches and everything, so I filled up with petrol for the journey there and back. My son took us down there, he drove us, and we got down there and we saw the undertaker, and he said, yeah, it's fine. I had to do the eulogy, and I did the early years that they wouldn't have known about, when I was like I've just said to you earlier, about the teenage life, and little things. And it wasn't long, but I did my bit. And they were all crying. You know, there was like his wife, Patsy, his two daughters, grandchildren, and me and Cherie. That was it. But it was a nice personal little ceremony.
Mm.
And it was so close. You know, we all knew each other. And then at the end, before that, Patsy had told me that he was wearing the suit in the coffin, a blue suit. Which I wore as well. That was our last performance on the Anton Deck show, but that was the last one show we ever did, you know.
Mm.
And so my closing thing was the coffin's there at the side of me, and I just said, well, old pal, yo, this is our last performance together, you know. And that was it. He just.
And now we're both going.
And they were all in tears. I thought, what have I done here? And but it broke. You know, it was hard. It was hard. But I got there.
That's beautiful, though, to have. You know, so many people don't have that, do they?
No.
And and to have those. That wonderful lifetime of memories to travel through your life with somebody.
Yeah.
Well, all I can say is thank you. That's been an absolute delight to talk to you.
Oh, thanks.
And thank you for sharing your time.
Yeah,
and
sorry for making you cry.
Oh, I love a good cry though. No, I think it's beautiful to have those, like I was saying, to have shared that lifetime with somebody and have had all those experiences with somebody.
That's a long time, like from being teenagers. That's a 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, 2010, 2000. Well, nearly 80 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, 70 years.
Yeah, it's a beautiful legacy that you've left as well.
People have said, oh, you're so humble, Sid. You know, I said, well, I'm just lucky to do what I've done, you know. I wouldn't swap it for the world. I remember when I remember Eddie saying, going back, I got the sack from my decorating job because I wouldn't work overtime because I was doing a show at night, and the boss knew it. It's only a small firm, and I says, well, you know, I'm working tax. He says, well, you're going to have to make your mind up whether you want to go in show business or you want to, you know, do this as a living, a proper job. So I went to Eddie that night and I said, I'm doing it. So, you know, I said, pick your P45 up in the morning. Right, okay. So I went to Eddie that day to the job, and I said, Ed, can we turn professional? He said, well, we've got enough work, he said, but not too much. So I said, oh, you know, and all that. And, I'd love to sort of turn pro. He said, no, not yet, okay. So the next day I went to the Youth Employment Bureau, which was then, and luckily it was winter time coming, but I got another job as a decorator. Brilliant. I was only there a fortnight, and Eddie says, we're turning pro. And I went, oh no, because I love this job. Yeah, I really did. He was a great boss and everything. Oh no, I don't want to turn pro. You know, anyway, I did, and thank God I did, because you know, look what we got. Yeah.
And did your mum and dad get to see your
My dad, bless him, that was another sad story. My mum, she died in 85, so she was 72. But my dad, bless him, he never saw me. I'd been pro a year, 64 he died. He had a heart attack. Very sudden. It was at the Brooklyn Trades and Labour Club. Well, he'd been fishing all day, and he rushed home, had his tea, rushed to the club, sat down, and he died like he said he wanted to go, with a pint in his hand. He just keeled over, and that was it, yeah.
Oh, it's a shame if he'd kind of fostered that love of music.
Oh, he loved me. I remember going with my first girlfriend. He said, that's it. You know, Sid and Eddie's finished now. You will never, you know, and all that. He's poking the fire, you know. And bless him. Yeah, he did.
He got to see some of that, though.
Only the work he saw. He knew I had potential, I suppose. And when I met Eddie, he knew, you know. It was great, yeah. But sad, but he was up there. He's where Ed now.
Yeah, they'll be watching together.
Yeah,
they'll
be
telling him all the stories.
Yeah.
Well, thank you ever so much. This journey down Comedy Lane has been amazing. Thank you.
Comedy Lane. Wow, I think this is a motorway.
It was a long lane. No, that's brilliant. Thank you.
Bless you.
Thank you. Take care.
And you.
And Caroline's Comedy Memory Lane series continues throughout the year. In the meantime, there's a reminder that our Comedy Writing Legends series also continues on Distinct Nostalgia. So far, we've been talking to Jan Etherington, who was the comedy writing legend who penned Second Thoughts and Faith in the Future. And we also heard from Marks and Gran, Lawrence Marks and Maurice Gran, who penned, among other things, Goodnight Sweetheart, Shine on Harvey Moon, and of course, Birds of a Feather. You can hear both of those interviews on Distinct Nostalgia now.
Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM, and there are loads more excellent shows to listen to on our website. Danny Rogers recalls growing up with 321's Dusty Bin.
So my first encounter with Dusty Bidden was my dad sort of wheeling him out as a young boy. I had no clue what this thing was. And I was frightened, of course. But as it went on, I was like, oh, this is my new best friend. And I was one of the lucky few that actually had one in their bedroom.
Kathy Gorey discusses the legacy of Rosemary the telephone operator.
Hello, hello.
I had an effect on a bunch of Gen Xers. Or maybe I was their first female crush or something. But I meet men, some of them quite powerful now, who grew up watching me. You know, watching Rosemary, rather. But I thought, this is nuts. And they let me do pretty much what I wanted to do. Everything was always rhyming. Some you call the police department or Hong Kong. And that's what I thought Rosemary would sound like.
And John Boy himself talks about his childhood with the Waltons.
It was really one of the great ensemble TV shows. I mean, we had 11 regulars. And although the story was told from John Boy's point of view, one of the great things about the show was the main story could be about the littlest kid one week, or it could be about the grandparents. So you had all this wonderful generational comprehensiveness about it. And so I would call it first and foremost a great ensemble.
These programs and many more are available at distinctnostalgia.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to be notified whenever a new episode becomes available. And if you like what we do, then please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every penny helps us to make even more amazing content just for you. Go to distinctnostalgia.com and click on the donate button. Thank you for listening, and bye for now.
Distinct Nostalgia is brought to you in partnership with Life Rooms and Mersey Care NHS Foundation Trust. We've lots of activities for you to do at home at liferooms.org. Staying well, staying home.